I love getting up in the morning and going and processing or going and do my nets. It's just, it's a different life. When you talk to people about it, they're like, wow, that's so amazing. You're like, yeah, that's what I do for a living. Like, it's not 9 to 5. It's not sitting at a desk. It's something you've got to be born and bred to do.
This is Fish Tales, a seafood podcast. I'm John Sussman.
The Gulf of Carpentaria is a large, remote, shallow sea shared by the Northern Territory and Queensland, bounded by Arnhem Land to the west and Cape York Peninsula to the east. Cape York is one of Australia's last great wilderness areas. Katie Simmons is a fifth-generation barramundi fisher based out in this wild country, working from an isolated frontier fishing camp more than 700 kilometres from her home in Cooktown. She spends three quarters of the year here. This remoteness could be daunting for most. For Katie, it's where she grew up, where she works, and where she loves to be.
I'm Katie Simmons. We are fishermen out of the Kendal River, so that's north of Pomperal. And I live in Cooktown some parts of the year, and then the rest there. I think I was about 3 months old when my mum and dad took me out fishing. They worked for my grandparents, and then they saved up and bought a boat named the ET. And I grew up there with my younger two brothers. Most of it is just having to do our schoolwork by the air and then hanging to go and do net, mum and dad, and crab pots and go and do our own fishing. Because it was always an adventure, fishing. Oh, I think it's just where I was born, bred. Like, I just, you know, my parents raised me. I lost my father and my brother in the Gulf. And then now I've got three of my own kids, so I want them to experience the life I got to grow up with. When I got together with my partner, I took him up there, and he loves the ocean as well. It's just something easy about the ocean. It's always, I don't know, it's just somewhere, it's home. It's where we came to. It's where I was brought up. It's just home.
The western coastline of Cape York is not as rough as other parts of the Gulf of Carpentaria, enabling inshore seagrasses and mangroves to flourish, especially along the river mouths of the estuaries, where the mixing of fresh and marine waters plays an important role in the development of marine life, which is abundant in this region. This part of the Gulf of Western Cape York is some of the wildest, most hostile terrain in Australia.
We fish from February to the start of October out of the Kendal River, so it's on the west coast of Queensland. It's wonderful. To get there, you go through the maddest little goat track, and then you come out onto a beautiful beach. It's about 19 kilometres of beach, and you travel along that, and then you go into a bit of scrubland. And on the side of the river is kind of our big camp is in the mangroves kind of thing. Nana Granite have been there for 48 years, probably longer. We've got quite a camp there. They've got everything you have in town. So plus the boats on wharfs and, yeah. We're a couple miles in from the mouth, so it just winds up the river. It's about three bends up. It's quite wide. There's a lot of mangroves, but we're on like a bit of a flat with ridges, and we've got a pretty decent-sized house. We've got wharfs. We've got big rock walls near us. Like, a lot of the tourists that come up, they fish along the rock walls. It's beautiful because in the afternoon when the sou'wester comes in, you're down on the deck processing, it scoops straight through your boat. So the breeze is beautiful, and the camp's in a nice spot that you can just drive over the ridge from, or there's three or four ridges from the beach, and you can drive into the back of the camp. We've got wells for water. It's very peaceful, especially when the motors are off. It's really beautiful. And if you have the motors off and it's rough, you can hear the ocean roaring.
Who could have imagined what influence comedian Paul Hogan would have on building the mythology of one of Australia's most iconic fish, the barramundi? In his 1986 movie, Crocodile Dundee, Hogan cemented in history the status of this most majestic marine beast from the wilds of North Australia. Although this member of the sea bass family is found in many tropical waters throughout the globe, it is the Gulf Barra that has become the most famous. Revered as a quintessential Australian brand, the name barramundi, after all, is derived from an Australian Aboriginal word meaning large-scaled river fish?
So we catch barramundi, king salmon, all our byproduct. We don't throw anything away. I believe if we catch it and it's dead, we use it. Like, it's not just, it's not wasteful. But we can catch it from barramundi to king salmon, jewelfish, grunter, blue salmon. For the first half of the year, the second half of the year, we catch grey mackerel, shark, and the odd Spanish. So we have nets. So a lot of people call them square hooks. They're like a nylon net that we put out. And per license, we can have, I think it's 6 sheets in the river and then or 12 sheets at the front. So we can fish either or, river or out the front. And we just set them with our dinghies, anchors on either ends, buoys with our symbol numbers on them, and yeah, it's very, very easy, but you gotta have a good back, nice strong shoulders. So yeah, a net could stay in the same spot for a couple of days if it's catching well. We check it every 4 hours though, so right through the night, during the day, it doesn't give it enough time for the fish to die, like you're still getting nice fresh fish all the time. So they come out of the net into your dinghy, and then we take them home into what we call brine tanks. So they're tanks full of salt water that are freezing cold to stop the product from going rotten. And then we'll get it out and we'll process it. So it's filleted, skinned, trimmed up, and packed and straight into a big snap. But within 6 to 10 hours, you've got a frozen block of fish. So once we've packed and frozen it, it goes on to a barge, goes around to Cairns, and we sell to Neil Moretto, he's Lenrex, and he just sells it all over Australia. I don't really, sometimes some of it used to go to WA, but these days I don't really know, but I know it doesn't go outside of Australia.
Life in a fishing camp is essentially a 24-hour job, 7 days a week for 8 months. This is an around-the-clock job with high water temperatures and such an energetic fish. Keeping the catch fresh is a task which demands constant attention and management.
We get up about 5 o'clock in the morning, between 5 and 6. We have our cup of teas and a bit of toast and we'll go and do our nets. It just depends who we've got working. If it's just me and my granddad, Dave, he'll go and do his nets. I'll go do my nets. Come back, we'll chuck our fish on the brine and put them in, chuck our fish on the deck and put them in the brine. And then we'll go up and have a bit of brekkie. It's 10 o'clock or something. And then as soon as we finish brekkie, we'll come down and we'll process all into it. And then in between processing, if we're going to go do our nets, we'll pull up and go do our nets. And then we'll come back and finish processing and then scrub down and go and do our nets again and get ready for the afternoon. It's the same thing each day, but just something happens. A different happens each day kind of thing. It's not a repetitive process. You can go at the front and it can be that rough you can't even see your nets, or you can go out the front. It's just there's a boat out there you want to go and say hello to. It's a different thing every day, but just the same, get up, go and do your nets, come home, process, go and do your nets, come home, have dinner in bed.
Whilst the barramundi gets much of the publicity and is the primary money catch for Katie, there are equally other important species caught in the small gill nets used to catch fish in this part of the Gulf. For her, the king salmons, blue salmons, threadfins, mackerels and sharks are even more tasty. For her, targeting the highly prized sea-run barramundi is key to their success, though.
Anything sweet between king salmon, grunter, jewelfish, grey mackerel's not too bad. We eat a lot of pomfrey in the mackerel season. Barra's a monkey fish. Everyone just thinks, oh, barra, it's good. It's good eating. And it's got a good name, so it's good eating. But I don't know. It's good for some stuff, I guess, but if you're asking me, it's not bad for sure. If you're freshwater bad, usually they're black or really dark, and they got a real muddy taste to them. They're real gritty and a bit slimy kind of tasting. I don't know. You can just taste the muddiness in them. Whereas bad, you get silver or gold, and they just got this nice, salty, clean taste. Like it's fresh. It's no gritty, no muddy, no sourness. It's, just a clean fillet kind of thing.
The far north of Australia has bred many unique and special characters. Dave Ward has been fishing in the Cape and the Gulf since the fishery was established. A pioneer of these waters, fishing is definitely in his blood, providing inspiration and motivation, often by way of a boot in the backside for extended generations of his fishing family.
Oh, he's an old rogue. He's one agile old bastard. He's I think he's 72, and he can just run rings around any young person I've ever seen in my life. But he won't give up fishing. He's too passionate about it. It's his happy place. When I first started working for him, we used to blue. He was too bloody bossy back then. But he is my best friend. I've worked for him. I was 15 when I started working for him, and I've just turned 30. So he's a very good boss. He's a very fair boss. He has a bit of trouble moving with the times, but he's doing it. And he's still fishing and still working hard at 72, and I completely respect that. And I'm proud that my kids get to see that.
Father and son fishing combinations can often be fractious. Grandfather and granddaughter combinations are rarely heard of, and rarer still heard of to be successful. For Dave and Katie, their relationship, bonded by blood, literally, and barra, has proven to yield mutual respect, admiration, and an outstanding quality of catch.
We had to unload one year, and it was really rough, really rough. But we had to get this fish on the boat. And well, we went out the mouth with the big boat to meet the mothership, and it was gigantic seas. And I remember we had to turn sideways with the ocean, and it was big, big waves coming on the side of the boat. And the whole boat laid over. You could see the keel and the prop was out of water. And he just turned around at the door, and he just shook his head at me with his massive eyes, like, what are we doing? Are we crazy? And we had to get the dinghy onto the boat, and I just remember his look on his face thinking, like, why are we doing this? We're psychos. Like, I'll never forget. Like, yes, we've had some really good good adventures. We've been in a lot of rough seas and a lot of stuff at the camp. He shot me a couple of years ago. I think I was about 19. We weren't even fishing when he did it. So I was really accident. We were back burning at the back of their cattle property, and he chucked the, well, there was a dingo. He went to shoot it. Then we realized there was a fire coming. So he just chucked the gun in and forgot to take the bullet out. And I jumped in and he chucked the fire bug in, and then the gun went off and went straight in my leg and out just above me, like my butt kind of thing near my spine. And it wrecked him. He had nightmares for months over that. But I did get a clean car and an ashtray full of money for Christmas, so I was stoked. But we've had some really good adventures. Oh, we've definitely had a few blues over the time. I'm probably the only decky in his whole fishing career that's made him walk off his own boat. But other than that, we get along really well. And my kids love fishing with him. And, I'm very lucky he's still in our lives, and my kids get to grow up with him.
This remote northernmost portion of Queensland harbours some of the most pristine wilderness in Australia. The range and diversity of the wildlife is as staggering as it is ferocious. For Katie Simmons, these are the same animals she and her family have always known, respected, and supported.
Part of the year we can go down the beach and you can see where the turtles will come up and lay their nests. We haven't seen a turtle come up for a few years, but we go down the next day and you can see where they've walked up or, you know, crawled up on the beach to lay their nests. So we cover them up. If we find a nest, we cover them all up so the pigs and that don't get into them. And so turtles and crocodiles, there's a lot of crocodiles. By jingus, there's a lot of crocodiles. They're good sometimes. We don't have any trouble. We've never had any trouble with crocodiles. They don't come near the camp. I don't know if it's because of the noise. They kind of swim up the river or swim down the river. You hardly ever see them at the camp. We did have a pet crocodile for a couple of years. They'd come in and take some frames and off we'd go again. We've never minded, like, as long as they bugger off again, they're all right. But we've never, you know, we're always in the water there, and we scrape our boats on the edge of the bank. So I don't know if we would do it these days. We usually take them down the mouth these days. But, yeah, like, they don't bother us. The kids know not to go near the water, so do the dogs. Yeah, there's, I think you just, well, we've taught our kids not to go near the water. They want to go down to the boat, they have got to have an adult. Always have their life jackets on. So, you know, they don't like going down there. So we're never worried about crocs with them. And in the dinghies, the kids don't hang over. They hang in the middle playing with the fish you get out of the net. So they can get anywhere from the, like the little bubble fellas to a couple meters. I think the one the other day was about 3.5 meters. We had a 16 footer not long ago that lived across the river. It's been a long time since we've seen any bigger than that. Usually they're the swamp crocs that come down, but yeah, just they're a bit timid. See, they don't really know what we are, and so they stay hidden. But I'm definitely sure there's probably bigger ones out there. But 15 and 16 foot is probably the most, the biggest we get these, like the biggest we see these days.
The cost of compliance for commercial fishermen is often unknown and unrecognised as a key impost on their job. Not only are the hours long, conditions harsh and returns unknown, but growing demands on fishers to be responsible for managing their own fisheries is for many a contentious and troubling development, often removing incentive for new entrants. Fishing, after all, is hunting and requires many different skills from farming.
I have no doubt that the fishery is going to get harder and harder for people to stay in the industry. The rules and regulations and that, it's just nearly becoming impossible to be a fisherman. So it's getting to the point that people don't care whether it's caught in Australia or not. They just want fish. And it's making it hard for the fishermen in Australia or for us in Queensland to actually just go about our business, and we don't hurt no one. None of them have been fishing the same river for all these years and make good catch, good fish. So we don't flog the country. Like, every year it's just gets better, or it has just a neutral year. Like, there's still a lot of fish around. I guess it's people's got different, like, the older generation, a lot of them have left. They couldn't handle the rules. And a lot of the younger generation just don't want to be bothered. For me, I'd love to go fishing, but it's just starting now would be going backwards too far.
Katie Simmons is an inspiring person. Growing up in the remote wilds of Cape York, with a true love of her environment, her job and her family, she still holds great hopes for the future. But perhaps she might be the last of one of Australia's great wild barramundi dynasties.
I stick around these days so my kids can have my, like, the same things I got to have as a kid. Got to have the adventures, and so do they. I love getting up in the morning and going and processing or going and doing my nets. It's just, it's a different life. And you talk to people about it, they're like, wow, that's so amazing. You're like, yeah, that's what I do for a living. Like, it's not 9 to 5. It's not sitting at a desk. But it's something you've got to be born and bred to do. It's got to be who you are. Like, yeah. And it's good when you take the kids out and they've got that much excitement and enjoyment for it. It's something worth doing. I don't do full seasons anymore, honey, because I've got the kids, one in school and a little one. But even doing the mackerel season, it's an adventure to go up and do it. And I think these days everything's so fast. Like, when I was a kid, it all seemed so slow, and you have to do this and you got to do that. These days, you get up in the morning, the next minute you're going to bed. It's just so many things to do, and to go fishing, it kind of slows down, and the kids get to enjoy the day. And yeah, see, I work for my grandparents, so when they probably finish up, my mum's a fisherman as well, and if they finish up and she doesn't, I'll probably keep going up to help her. For me to go into fishing now, like myself and my partner, probably will never happen. We're quite happy with our cows and our little block of land. But as long as Nan and Granddad are still fishing, I'll still be there to help them.
This is Fish Tales, a seafood podcast. A Deep in the Weeds production. I'm John Sussman. Follow us on Instagram at Fishtails Seafood Podcast or email us at fishtailspodcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay tuned for more tales from beneath the surface of the seafood world every Friday on your podcast app.